Welcome to A Quiet Life. I'm your host, Ruth Amos. 1 Thessalonians 4 says, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. In this podcast, I chat to all sorts of normal Christians, asking them just how they live their quiet lives and how they integrate their faith into their daily life. I hope that by listening, you will be encouraged to go out and live your own quiet life to the glory of God. You can find the episode show notes, the Quiet Life blog, and other resources at ruthamos.com.au. That's ruthamos.com.au. Now let's get on with the show. Hello, welcome to A Quiet Life. I'm your host, Ruth, and it's great to have you here. Today is episode 24, and as I record this, it is Wednesday the 10th of April 2019. Easter's just around the corner. Today's guest is Jenny Baxter. Jenny has her own podcast called Treasuring Mothers and can be found at treasuringmothers.com. And we talk about that, about motherhood, about her journey of losing her mother at 16. Her mother passed away from breast cancer when she was 16. So we talk about how that sort of affected her life and a whole lot of other things as well. It's a fantastic interview and I hope you really enjoy it. My personal update this week, last week we had the service of celebration of little Ned's life. If you remember, he was 6 years old and he passed away from leukemia. And the service was really meaningful, very big, quite emotional, as you can imagine, but full of hope and full of meaning. And it was just amazing to see the impact that Ned had had on the lives of the people in the community. We had a whole lot of people from the fireys that were there and the police and the ambulance and a whole lot of GPs that had worked with Ned's mum and people from the school community. And yeah, it was just amazing to hear the gospel preached because of Ned's life. And that was just, it was wonderful and incredibly sad, as you can imagine. This week, I've had to have a bit of a think because my life has gotten a bit fuller. I've been given some more editing work, which is great because editing is what brings in the money that pays the mortgage. This podcast doesn't yet. Well, it brings in a little bit, but not a whole lot. So a little reminder, you can support me on patreon.com if you want me to spend more time writing and podcasting and less time editing technical work from New Zealand. But I've been enjoying the editing work, but it has meant that I need to look at my life and just fit things in, schedule things a bit. So my blog post this week was about putting together a schedule. My days have felt very full. It's good. It's very good work. I'm enjoying it. But yeah, just trying to figure out what the priorities are, how much time to give to what things. That's going to be an ongoing process, obviously, as I sort of fit things, change things around. Does this work better in the morning or in the afternoon? What are my, biological cycles like? You know, how much energy do I have when to do what kind of work? For example, I find that if I'm writing a novel, in that first drafting stage, I can do that in the evening because it's a bit like telling myself a bedtime story. But editing of my own work probably needs to happen first thing in the morning. And so that probably means editing of other people's work probably needs to happen first thing in the morning as well. So it's just a matter of squeezing those things in, figuring those things out. Now, I'm very fortunate. I don't need to pick up children from school anymore or do any of that sort of mum's taxi running around. And if dinner comes late, then we deal with it. And I don't cook dinner every night either. I just like to say the boys in my house cook dinner, which is really wonderful. All those things need to be taken into account. And so I'm working on that. That's the thing I'm thinking of. Moz is on camp for the next 3 days. He's a teacher and the year 8 boys are going on camp and he's going with them. So he's going to have a great time, I'm sure, out sleeping in a tent, roughing it, going a few bushwalks, doing bits and pieces. He's just not around for the next couple of nights. I'll cope. I'll miss him, but I'll cope. But after that, he's on school holidays because he's a teacher and Tasmanian school holidays start on Monday. So we'll have him home then. So, you know, it's famine or feast or both. And of course, we're thinking towards Easter. So the churches that we're in are preparing for Easter now. We're thinking about Easter services. We're thinking about how we're going to celebrate that, who we're going to celebrate with, and looking forward to that super special time in the Christian calendar. So, yeah, that's sort of what I'm thinking about last week and this week. And going on with normal things. So I'm hoping that I will be taking a few days off over Easter. I have told the editing people at least that I won't be doing that over the Easter weekend, so that's really good. And so I will have a few days at home with Moz. Hopefully we'll get some little adventures in and I'll have something exciting to tell you about. And yeah, but I hope that your Easter weekend is going to be wonderful as well. I hope that you're blessed as we enter Holy Week next week and really think about what Jesus did for us. It doesn't get old, does it? I mean, it's just amazing the sacrifice that he made. And we just so, well, you stand back in awe and wonder when you concentrate on it. And it's just wonderful to have a time of the year when we do really concentrate on it for a while. So whatever your Easter entails, I hope that it's really blessed. I'm going to two churches at the moment. Yes, I know that's really strange. But if you're in the in the Hobart area and you don't already have a church to go to at Easter, then on Good Friday at 9:30 and Sunday, Easter Sunday at 9:30, you can come down to St. Clement's in Kingston for a fairly large service. Or if you're into a smaller, more traditional service, then head along to St. Luke's in Taruna. And I'm just having a look at that when the services are there. So Good Friday at St. Luke's is at 10 a.m. and Easter Sunday is at 9, and that'll be really lovely services there as well. So yeah, wherever you do, whatever you do, even if you're at home remembering just what Jesus has done for us Easter weekend, I pray that it's really blessed. Now, I am aware that we have another Wednesday before that, and there will be a podcast next Wednesday, but you know, I've just come back from Bible study and thinking about Easter stuff, so I thought I'd do a little bit of an ad so you can get organized. Yeah, but wherever you are around the world, I pray that your Easter is gorgeous and blessed. And also, in the Anglican Church, we celebrate Palm Sunday, Jesus entering into Jerusalem and all the celebration of that. And that'll be a fun Sunday this Sunday. So if you're a Palm Sunday celebrating person, I hope you enjoy that as well. Yeah, we used to go around the church. So we'd all have our little palm crosses and we'd follow a big cross and we'd exit out one door and we'd walk around the church all singing a hymn together. It's a very long hymn, All Glory, Lord and Honour, or All Glory, Praise and Honour, if you use the new words. And we'd start singing it as we left the church and we'd walk around the church and come back in the other door. Now, that's at St. Clement's here in Kingston. Once you get to a certain congregation size, it gets a bit interesting. It takes so long to get us out of the church and then back in again. So that was fun. And the other thing is that you always changed keys slightly and you changed timing slightly. So by the time you got back into the church, you were half a verse ahead and, you know, two tones flatter than everybody else or sharper or something, which was always amusing. But we don't do that anymore. Anyway, some traditions are just good to look back on, I think. We've often had donkeys in the church as well. So I don't know what we're doing this Sunday, whether we've got donkeys coming in or not. But there's always a risk, isn't it? My grandmother used to tell me stories about when the donkey came into the church and what happened to the floor of the church as the donkey did what donkeys naturally do, because we keep them outside and they don't need to be toilet trained. I mean, church is great, isn't it? It's just a community of people and we make those connections. And it's just like the family Christmas lunch. You have these family stories that you can tell for years afterwards and laugh about. It's a joy. Anyway, I have gone on a really major tangent there. I hope you enjoyed my reminiscing. And let's listen to this interview with Jenny. She's got such wonderful things to share, both here on my podcast and then on her own Treasuring Mothers podcast. And I really hope you enjoy it. Hello, everybody. Welcome. Today's guest is Jenny Baxter. Welcome, Jenny.
Thank you, Ruth. Nice to be here today.
Jenny's very professional. I first heard Jenny's voice when she was a radio announcer at Ultra 106.5, and then we met up. And Jenny has her own podcast, as well as many other things. So a very full life. But you're not the first podcaster I've interviewed.
So, oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, well, don't get good. That privilege. I'm sorry. But she has her own one and it's called Treasuring Mothers. And I'll, of course, put the link in and we'll hear a lot about that, I guess, as we
as the time goes by. That's right. And not, you said you heard me when I was a radio announcer. I am still a radio announcer. Yes.
Sunday morning.
Sunday mornings from 6 until 10. And then I've got the Treasuring Mothers radio show that happens during the week as well.
Yeah, of course. And Jenny's husband, Stephen, is the head of the Baptist Church, and they have five grown-up children.
Yes, that's right.
Amazing, which is why Jenny is very into motherhood.
Well, you know, way to put it. There's a whole story around that too.
Yeah. It's awesome. But we're not going to start there. We will start with, how did you become a Christian, Jenny?
Well, interestingly, I grew up in a Christian home but was going to the Methodist church. It wasn't uniting even back then. Mm. And so while we said grace at meals and we went to church on Sundays, our level of engagement in Christian things was very, I feel, fairly surface level. Mm. And very different to the way that I've brought up my own children. When I was, so in the Methodist church, it was sort of assumed that you were christened as an infant, you grew up into the church, and then when you were 15, you were confirmed as a member, and then you went on from there. So the confirmation was actually confirmation of what happened when you were christened. Mm, mm. And I think it's probably similar in the Anglican church. So there was always this understanding that we talked about ourselves as Christians, but there was no meaning of, what did that mean? There was no, it was just an assumption. Mm. But when I was in grade six, we had an exchange student come to our church. And she was the teacher of my Sunday school class. And she was the one who explained to us that at some point we would need to make a decision for ourselves. Mm-hmm. Will we follow Jesus for what he was saying he did or not?
Where was she from?
Singapore. Mm. So strong Singapore Christian, a lovely, lovely girl. She was hosted by one of my mum's best friends. And she taught me how to make fried rice. So I actually make really good fried rice.
Awesome.
She was the one who explained that. And then a few years later, I became quite friendly with a girl through Girl Guides, of all things, who went to a Baptist church. Mm. And Jan and her family had much more open conversation about spiritual things, but she went through the process of being baptized. And so this was in the early years of high school. Mm. So that when I got to the point of year 10, when I'd seen Jan be baptized and was reading the Bible that I had been given at Sunday school one night, going through a pretty tough time with friends at school who were being a bit yucky. You know what year 10, year 9's like in high school with girls. And so one night I was praying and said, reading my Bible and said, Jesus, I feel alone, I feel lost. Will you be my friend? Mm. I believe in what you have to say. And it was like the next day everything changed. It was like I had somebody next to me when I was on my own or when they were saying horrible things or trying to trip me up with my words or trying to they would always try and catch me and make me feel stupid because of what I said. I always felt like I just had Jesus there with me, and he still is. He's there with me, my constant companion in everything I do. And so the timing of that was amazing. It was just about 6 months before my mum died. And so that, I think, was the thing that carried me through that really tough time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so tell us about your mum.
Yeah, well, my mum, she had breast cancer. That was diagnosed first when I was in grade 4 and my sister was in grade 3. She was an older mum. She was in her 40s when my sister and I were born. Mum and dad already had two girls, 10 and 12 years before me. And my arrival was a bit of a reconciliation for my parents. Right. They'd had a bit of a rough time. I don't know the details. I only know that Dad disappeared for a little while and my mum had no money. She had to move in with her sister and didn't know what had happened to him before the days of mobile phones, of course, and internet. And so he just sort of disappeared off the face of the earth and wasn't in touch. And then when they did finally get back together because he came home again, then at some point I came along. Mm. And then it was clear, I think, that they decided that I needed to have a playmate. So then I had a younger sister. So that's how it worked out for us. But that meant she was in her 40s for both of us. And not only that, but my dad was also in his 40s, but had gone through a pretty horrific time being a nurse in the war. He and his mates at church had decided that they would get themselves medically equipped, or they just did, I think they did some complex sort of first aid training, so that when they went, they were called up as they expected to be, did their basic training in the army, which I didn't know all this, but have discovered that they, you have your 6 months or however long, 3 months or whatever the time was, basic training in the army. And then at the end of that, you were called up and said, okay, soldier, what do you want to do? And so my dad and his friends said, we want to go in the Air Force, in the medical corps. And so they all got spread out across the world in different places, but they were helping one step back from the front line all the time. And he ended up in Syria, in the very northern reaches of Africa, so the desert across the top near the Mediterranean, the top of Africa, and had some awful, awful things happen to him. Mum and Dad had got married just before he left, and he came back a changed man. He was completely not the same.
So often the story, isn't it? Yeah.
That's right. So obviously PTSD, but he had his basic psychiatric treatment that they gave them, and then was just told to go and live your life. However, there was no treatment or anything after that, and we didn't really get, I didn't understand that diagnosis until he was in his 80s or something, and finally he was properly treated. So not only did my mum die when I was 16 of breast cancer, but Dad was a very difficult person to live with, and he loved us to bits, there's no doubt about that, and he had his own personal faith, but it was a very difficult household to live in. So when you ask me about my mum, I sort of have to tell you she's a hero. She's one of my heroes because she managed this very difficult marriage. Was told that her marriage probably wouldn't last because it would be too difficult to sustain, but she stuck with it, and I really admire her for that. I value the 16 years that I had with her. I know there are a lot of women who have lost their mothers even before that, so... And they have very few memories. I've got lots of memories of my mum. It's just that they stop at 16. So it was sad because probably when I was about 14 years old and I was just starting to come home from school and enjoy having those chats with mum after school, and then she got sick, really sick. And so it just meant that because the cancer relapsed then, it meant that I didn't develop that close bond as a closer to being an adult type of person with my mum.
And were your older sisters at home during
They
that
both
time?
Got married when they were 21, so they had left by the time they were there when she was originally had her first operation. But they had married and left home by the time she started going on her downhill last run. Which was a couple of years long. So they were around. And in fact, one of them moved to a closer suburb with her husband and little baby so that they could be nearby. Yes, my sisters were around. But really, it was my younger sister and me. And then, of course, I think mum's big concern was, how on earth are those girls going to cope when I'm not here to buffet, you know, be the buffer between dad and them? It was hard.
Yeah, very hard. Okay, so can we skip forward to your own journey into motherhood? I started reading through your blog posts and that just wasn't fun.
Is it supposed to be fun? It's always an adjustment for everyone. I think it was, you know, when you get married, you have a time without kids and then you go, okay, time to have kids. And I didn't really think about it very much. It was just, all right, this is the next thing you do. However, one day when I was about 7 months pregnant, I was reading an article by someone who I very greatly admired, who was a bit of a rock star, Larry Norman, who's someone that people might know.
Rock star. Yes.
And I thought he was going to be reading and talking about you know, his successes as a rock star musician and how he loved traveling the world and telling people about Jesus. And he didn't talk about that at all, funnily enough. He said what he did was nowhere near as important as being a parent. And I was going, what? How can that be? That's not what I thought he was going to say. But then as time went by in the article, he just kept on saying it ended up being the thing in the article. Being a parent is the most important thing you can do. And it was the first time I had ever thought about that. I know that's a fairly loaded statement because not everybody agrees with that. And of course, if you don't have children, then you don't have that. Yeah. But I think if you are a parent, it definitely is one of the most impacting things you can do. There's very few things that we do that make a difference into future generations. But being a parent is one that does definitely make an impact into future generations. And so, yes, I understand that that's not necessarily everybody's viewpoint, but for me, reading it as a 7-month pregnant woman who'd not really thought about what I was about to do, it was a big wake-up call. Yeah. And all of a sudden I thought, my gosh, I'm going to have this little baby in my arms soon, and I don't know how I'm going to manage that because I haven't got mum here to help me with that. And that was a bit of a oh no sort of moment. I remember talking about it with a friend who'd not long had a baby and saying, this is just, how come God's entrusting me with this? I feel so unequipped and unprepared and that's just not what I had signed up for. I was just doing the next thing. So thinking that through in those final weeks of the pregnancy, I think I put my science maths brain on. I did science and maths at uni, and it was where I just compartmentalized life a little bit like that and decided, well, really, I guess it's a 20-year project, isn't it? I've got a tiny, defenseless little baby that I will have in my arms in a few weeks. By the time she is 20, and I actually had a bit of a, I didn't know it was a she, but I had an image in my head of an adult that I was having a really great conversation with and enjoying their company and having a talk about deep spiritual things and going, that's what I'm aiming for. I'm aiming for a functional adult who's well equipped to leave home, prepared to be part of a really thriving church community, and being able to not just be independent but interdependent. So she's able to, or he or she's able to be part of the broader community in a really positive, constructive way. So I thought, okay, 20-year project, I can do this. I can get my head around that. And so, yeah, that was how I was thinking about it as the birth progressed and ended up having this little baby.
Yeah. Wow. So you said with 5 children that we'd hear more about that.
Yes.
Is there a reason why you have 5 children?
Why I have 5 children?
That's a ridiculous question.
Isn't it funny, when you first get married, you have this perception that you're going to have the similar sort of family to what you had. Unless you've had sometimes I know there's only children who go, I am not going to be an only child. I'm going to make sure I have more than one. But I think for the most part, people go, okay, I'm one of two. I'm comfortable with two. I'm going to have 2 children. With me, I was saying, oh, I'm one of 4. I'm comfortable with 4. I think 4 is great. 4 is a good number. My husband, Stephen, came from a family of 3, and he was quite happy to stop after 3, and that was fine. And we got to 3, and I said, well, I thought we were going to have more. And he said, really? I hadn't thought that. And so we had to work that through, and then he goes, okay, let's go for it. So we went for number 4, and then I thought, great, family complete, gave away all baby clothes, gave away all the bassinet, the cot, the capsule, everything, baby bath. To discover that actually number 5 was on the way. And that was actually quite a big upheaval, because I was very aware that I felt like I had a time limit as a mother. I definitely wanted to have my children in my sights till they were beyond their 16th birthday, because I wanted to make sure I got that didn't happen to me. I wanted to make sure that they got beyond that. I also wanted to make sure I got them at least to being that age by the time I was mum's age. And this is one of those silly things that affects everyone, I think, that you can't imagine yourself being a parent beyond the age of your own parents. So, you know, for most people this doesn't happen until their parents don't die until they're in 70s, 80s, 90s. And so you have that sort of picture of yourself. My mum died when she was in her late 50s. Mm. And so I couldn't imagine life beyond late 50s for myself. Mm. So being pregnant with number five, I was literally counting my fingers trying to work out how old I would be by the time she got to 16.
Mm.
And thankfully, I beat that by about 3 years, I think it was. So that was good.
Mm.
I would have more years up my sleeve than my mum had with me.
Mm.
Now I've well and truly beaten that, and it's still been an issue until actually just 10 days ago when I was at a conference, and the speaker, I was listening to someone called Lisa Harper from deep south of America. He had a really broad American accent and talked about y'all all the time.
Yeah.
But she had some amazing things to say and talked specifically about people. She had been told that she wasn't going to live for very long. Mm. Her adopted daughter had been told she wasn't going to live very long, but God got through those moments. And so at the end, that was not the whole part of her story.
Yeah,
that was
sure.
just some of her journey.
Yeah.
At the end, she said, so if anyone's been told that they don't have long to live or they've got a death sentence over their heads, I want you to – we were all standing at that point. She said, I want you all to sit down. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I've been doing this to myself. I've been telling myself that I'm not going to live for much longer. I've been planning my funeral. I've been doing all these other things because I think that now I'm past my mum's age, I haven't got much longer to go. That is a total fib.
Yeah.
That's a complete lie.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen to me. I'm fit and healthy and well, and I at other times I know I'm going to live into my 80s and
90s. Yeah.
But there's still this shadow. So I sat down, and then the people gathered around me and prayed for me, and I was released from that. So it's only been the last 10 days that I can go, oh, I don't have to worry about that anymore. I have got decades ahead of me yet.
Yeah.
I don't have to have this urgency that I've had to get things done so that I can get them done before I die. And that might be next year for all I know. I don't have that sitting there. So that's a relief. And I can't even remember what your question
was. That's wonderful. That's awesome. I'm really proud. Yeah, so we were just talking about you having the five kids. So that's what a wonderful time of healing. That's
That's right. So it's amazing those things that you tell yourself that you don't realise you're telling yourself.
Mm, the lies you live under.
Yes.
Yeah.
And how God doesn't want you to live there, but you keep on thinking, but that's where I belong, you know? And then it's not till someone calls you on it that you go, okay.
That's fantastic.
That was a thing. That is a thing. I need to deal with that.
Mm. So your podcast, how did that come to be?
Well, it's an extension, really, of the blog and the website I've been developing for about 3 years now. And in actual fact, when our youngest daughter, who's now just turned 23, when she started school, so when she was five, I really had this sense that God wanted me to pass on the things to other women that he'd been showing me all the way along. Mm. So I'd very intentionally, knowing I didn't have my mum around to help me do the mother thing, I had intentionally, as I said before, Jesus was by my side, is by my side all the time.
Mm.
And so I'm always talking to him about what next. How am I going to do this?
Yeah, see,
I've got this issue, this problem. I need to do this. I don't understand that. What do I do now? Who do I talk to?
Because I've talked to, well, Moz is one of the people, my husband Moz, and Scott, who I've interviewed before, we've talked about how, because their fathers haven't been present, they've had to learn how to father from God.
Mm.
And so what you're saying is essentially the same thing. You can learn how to mother from God.
Yep.
When you don't have that mothering.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not that I didn't have great women in my life either. Mm. It's just because I have my older sisters. I end up with a fantastic stepmom. I can't, you know, talk about her more highly enough.
Mm.
But I didn't have a mum. And so having God there every minute of the day to say, I don't know what to do, help me, was the way that I got through those times when I was just a bit lost.
Absolutely. So you started writing those things in a blog?
Yes, that's right. So when Hillary started school, I really felt that I was about to write a parenting book. Then it didn't happen that way at all. It wasn't I'll write a book. It was we were at that point publishing a magazine called Alive Magazine, which had once been On Being Magazine. Mm. We were the directors of the company. Stephen had started as the graphic designer there, and gradually as time gone by, we'd ended up in this place of leadership there. And we had recently taken on a magazine called Christian Woman that had been about to fold from CWCI, Christian Women Communicating Internationally. And so that was happening. But the way things turned out, they did a big reshuffle that year that Hillary started school, and they were looking for someone to oversee Christian Woman. And the administrator at the place noticed that I was looking for work, and he said, "What's Jenny looking for work with them for? She should be working with us." And so all of a sudden I became the product manager of Christian Woman magazine, which was a bit unexpected. And even the book, the whole idea of a book was unexpected, because mm-hmm. I had seen myself as a science and maths girl mm-hmm. all the way along. And it wasn't until then that I thought, oh, actually, this is where God wanted me to go all along. I did better in English than science and maths in year 12. Mm-hmm. Why didn't I notice that? But I just had been so focused on science and maths all the way. But I had been doing proofreading with the editor of On Being and then Alive magazine. I had been doing a whole lot of admin stuff. I had been doing lots of newsletters and bulletins back from when I was at uni. That's where I'd been leaning all that time. And so all of a sudden now I was the editor of Christian Woman magazine, which is how, well, that wasn't my title initially, but then the whole magazine publishing company folded. We went into receivership, very difficult time in our lives, and had to sell the magazines on to Sydney publishers, who kept me on, and they called me the editor. So that was an interesting excursion for 8 years of being a magazine editor, actually my dream job, what turned out to be, and had networks and connections all over Australia. Mm-hmm. That ended after a while, but before it ended, we moved to Tasmania. I ended up learning radio. It's part of the community radio station Heart FM up in the north of the state, not connected to the Heart commercial station down here, and learnt radio, moved to Hobart, did more radio down here, finished with the magazine, and then started working as a communications manager at Ultra 106.5 here in Hobart, and did that for 3 years before moving on to being the state manager of St Martin's Purse. And I did that for three and a half years. So it turned out that all this time, all those years, was actually apprenticeship. I was learning editing. I was learning writing. I was learning more about proofreading, sub-editing, radio. I went to uni and did journalism as a postgraduate course. I did back end website things. I started using an email service provider to send out newsletters. I started doing so all that, probably 15 to 17 years of training, to the point where at Samaritan's Purse I felt like God saying, okay, now's the time, I want you to do the thing. So I left Samaritan's Purse. It's about 3 years now since I gave notice there, and left to do this, which is to do some sort of parenting book, I thought. Still thought then. It took me a while to work out, probably 3 or 4 months. Actually, it's not parenting. It's about motherhood. It's about developing those gifts in women that they don't feel like they have, that lost feeling you have when you first have kids and you have no idea what you're doing. And it's about bringing people and understanding that they can lean on God too when they're going through tough times. So it's hearing the stories from other women who've gone through really difficult times and how Jesus got them through to a positive outcome. So I'm bringing stories to the fore, such as someone who's had multiple miscarriages and how God got her through that, or from women about what's another one I've done? Depression, postnatal depression. I've talked to some experts in the internet generation and how we as mothers need to adjust our understanding of the internet, because we didn't grow up with it like our kids are. So how can we help them? We've got to understand ourselves in that process before we can even help them. So there's a lot, somebody who's lost her husband and now she's got little children and no husband. So trying to understand those, who you are as a woman and as a mother, and hear the stories of how they ended up going, yes, I can do this because I've heard this woman on Jenny's show, or she's talked about it on a podcast, or she's written about how to get through that particular thing, and I can see I've got hope now. There's light at the end of the tunnel because of what I've heard through Treasuring Mothers. So that's the context for me.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exciting. I'm excited.
Oh, that's good.
I'm so excited. I brought you on my podcast to boost it because I just think it's so important. I think that many of us, yeah, as mothers, feeling really lost or just unsure of how to go through it or do it. And, you know, there's not only people who've lost their mothers like you have, but people who don't have a good relationship with their mother or their mother's parenting toolbox was
limited.
Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, to get that information and, as you say, to just get that hope from hearing someone else has been through this.
Yes, I can do that now. I can understand how to do it and I can understand that Jesus will help me through it.
Yeah.
And I think that's critical to the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. Awesome. All right. Last couple of questions that I ask everybody. But when do you feel close to God?
Yeah, so I read that question and thought that's an interesting one because as I said, I feel like he's with me all the time. So close to God. But then there's other times when I'm in really large worship environments with thousands of people and it's overwhelming and thinking, oh my gosh, this is what it's going to be like in heaven.
Mm.
I know we're going to have jobs to do. I know there's going to be food. Jesus ate. Isn't that good? Jesus ate after he was resurrected. He cooked a barbecue meal of fish and that was really great.
Awesome.
But we'll have jobs to do. He'll have tasks for us. But I know that there will be time when we will be in the throng of thousands and thousands of other people worshipping and I'm just overwhelmed with, oh, this is just a little taste of heaven. Mm-hmm. So I've been in a few places. There have been a few times I've been in multicultural contexts and feeling that. Yes, mm-hmm. It's going to be a multicultural place. We won't be homogenous in heaven. We will all be very different and yet we'll still have this heart and desire to be close and be in the presence of God, which will be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Another time is just when I'm surrounded by nature. So I frequently walk on the beach here in Blackmans Bay early in the morning, sun rising, water come, you know, tides changing, wind blowing, sometimes snow on the mountain as well. It's just amazing. Mm-hmm. And to be acknowledging God for his creation and aware that this beach has been here for thousands of years. And once there weren't houses there. And one day, Bass and Flinders sailed up that river and saw this beach. And just being aware of the length of time, the eons to create that space, that little bit of earth. I just love that. And then there are other times when I'm falling asleep in bed at night and going, and this is something that's been coming to me just in more recent years, is thinking of Jesus and the depth of his love for me and how he just values me so much and wants to be close, wants to be known by him and for me to know him. And just going, Jesus, you are amazing. Mm-hmm. You went through that level of depth of sacrifice, this pain, that torture, so that I could experience this level of closeness with you. And I'm just so overwhelmed by that, to know that you love me that much.
Mm-hmm.
And not just me, millions, billions of people.
Mm.
That's amazing.
Mm, that individual love.
Yeah, individual love for billions of people. it's beyond our ability to grasp it and understand that. And that's how it works.
Mm. And is that the thing that you wish everybody knew about Christianity?
Well, I guess it's that depth of relationship that he desires to have with each of us. And I believe for every single person there is that little voice, that little call saying, will you be mine? Will you be close to me? I've done the work for you. I accept and love you as you are. You don't have to do anything. Just acknowledge my small voice. Yes, that's what I would hope everybody would understand and come to grips with.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us? Have we covered it all?
I think we might have covered as much as I need to say for the moment. I suppose I'm always interested in encouraging women and being a voice of hope for women. Mm. And it's very easy, especially for Christian women, for us to be we're so used to this idea of submitting to our husbands, and yet that's not what Paul really meant, I don't think. In his cultural context, that was incredibly important. But I think for us, we forget that we are alongside our husbands. We are co-heirs with our husbands. It's not, either or. It's not husbands before wives. It's we are to stand together and we're alongside each other and let our voice be heard. Let's take our place as leaders in our families, as leaders in our churches, in our communities and beyond. But people, we forget that. And so I'm still learning how to do that. I mean, I because of my overbearing father, it is so easy for me to just slide into Stephen's shadow. But I have to constantly challenge myself to take steps forward into that. And I think I'm getting better at doing that as time's going by. So
I think we wait to be asked, don't we?
We do wait to be. We tend to hang back.
Yeah.
And instead of putting ourselves forward, and I think we need to get better at putting ourselves forward.
Yeah.
Even if that means getting slapped over the wrist, and that's the hard thing.
That's the hard thing, yeah.
But you have to keep on pushing into that space, because if we don't take that initiative, how are our daughters going to do it?
Yeah.
We're talking about equality in the workplace. How are we going to do it unless we actually take the steps and do that more?
Yeah.
It's a challenge, a constant everyday cultural shift that we have to do, and it's not a simple thing.
No, absolutely. But I agree with you. It's a cultural shift that's happening. And if we don't model it in the church, then people aren't going to see a healthy model of what this is.
And if we don't model it in our marriages, and if we don't model it in lots of contexts, then how are the younger generation going to see that happening? You know, we haven't seen it happen. Somebody's got to break the cycle, haven't they?
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah. Who's going to do it unless we do?
Well, I see very exciting times ahead for you.
Oh, do you?
I do.
I pray so. Yeah.
That's exciting. Thank you very much for sharing.
Thank you. And thank you for all you're doing with your podcast and your blog. And I'm sure you're bringing a lot of good stories to the light and, you know, emphasizing things that people need to hear. So that's congratulations amazing on what you're doing.
Thank you. So, yes, I just want to plug it at the end, but I'll put it in the show notes. But treasuringmothers.com is your website. So you can find everything there.
Yep. Thanks, Ruth. Really appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Isn't that great? Thank you very much, Jenny, for sharing, and thank you for listening. Next week, we have John Zeckendorf on our show. He is the first Tasmanian to climb Mount Everest, and so you can imagine there's some great stories with him. I want to thank especially Catherine Joy for the music for this podcast. You can contact me by email, ruth@ruthamos.com.au, on Facebook at Ruth Amos Author, or Twitter at A Quiet Life Blog. Don't forget that if you think of somebody who could really be helped by this episode, please share it with them. And if you could possibly go on iTunes and leave a rating or a review, it'll help spread the word. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll chat to you again next week.